Good morning, everybody. My name is Randy. I am an alcoholic. Hi. Can we have a moment of silence, please, and gratitude for the Alcoholics Anonymous recoveries of the past 75 years? Also, there will be 15 to 20 minutes at the end of the meeting for sharing from the floor. Today, our speakers will be Mary Alice C. from California, Jack W. from Michigan, and Diane C. from California. So we'll start our meeting with Mary Alice.
Good morning. My name is Mary Alice, and I'm an alcoholic. Well, this is a real pleasure to be here and a real surprise as well. I got a call on Friday from my sponsor, Francine Ward, and she informed me that I was going to be speaking this morning. So apparently, when I got the invitation, I didn't quite think that I cut the mustard to be presenting to such a great group and just didn't think I had that much to offer. And Francine gave me a call Friday. I thought, well, I guess God had a different plan. I guess there's some message I'm going to be delivering today that's important to maybe one of you. Forgiveness for me is really in thinking about it. It's accepting people, places, things, and most importantly, myself. I don't feel like my story is really much different than a lot of your stories. Part of my story is I've heard throughout the rooms of AA in most all of you. But I'll tell you anyway a little bit about my story because it's me, and you're here to hear a little bit about me. So here you go. I'm the last of nine children. My father's from Spain. Parents met in Madrid, and every year of my life, my parents spent in Spain during the summers. So I don't want to go on too much about parents being unavailable, but they weren't super available. Summers were pretty random, eight older siblings having parties, and sangria was a big drink, and I certainly participated in quite a lot of sangrias. We grew up in San Diego. And father was a physician, surgeon. Mother was unavailable with a lot of anxiety and took a lot of medications. So when she was home, she wasn't around too much. I had a learning disability. Education was a huge emphasis in my family to do well and to be successful. And so with a learning disability and as number nine, I was trying to follow behind quite a crowd of a couple physicians and attorneys ahead of me. So I would get into a class, and Sister Charlene would say, oh, you're Mary Alice. You're one of the cartonesses. It's okay. I can say my own last name. And I'd say, yeah, I am, but I'm not like Pilar. I'm not like Isabel. No, I'm different. Because their expectations were that I was going to be as successful and thrive, and sports was where I thrived. On the court, I was tomboy. So I was successful outside, but not so successful in the classroom. I was good with I was passing tests through cheating. I wrote my answers down on my uniform, went to private Catholic schools, and got caught a lot. So I was in trouble a lot. A lot. I was always at the, speaking. Parents were being brought in because of troubles that I was getting into. And a lot of that, I think I told you enough about that. I felt like I was a sponge as a child. I was aware of my mom and my dad's relationship and being from bicultural relationship that they had. They had their differences in the way that they raised their kids and their philosophies. And I felt like I was caretaking for my mother quite a bit. As a young child, I was her caretaker. And that alcohol for me at age 13 was able to give me an ability to just check out and not think about what my mom, was dealing with. So anxiety pills, and so I went on to, I'll wrap up my story, went on to college after my siblings, went to UCLA because that's where they went. Finished that, went on to graduate school because I wanted to get away from my parents and just have a little respite. So I went on to graduate school in Boston, went to Boston University, and during this time I pretty much drank, worked out, and studied. That's about all I pretty much did. Exercise is always a huge ability for me to just, cope. It's a healthy one that I have been able to have. But the ability to check out for me at age 13 and later through alcohol and through medication was one that I felt with the I wasn't quite able to forgive myself until I came into AA and realized and started to dissect, and with a wonderful sponsor and a wonderful support, being able to start to really look at some of the things that I felt guilty about in my childhood, and just how I am today is a reflection of being able to just look at it's who I am, and it's accepting who I am. So I guess my message is in the, as I said it earlier, is in accepting people, places, things, and really myself. That's my message. Thanks.
Thanks, Mary Alice. Our next speaker is Jack.
My name's Jack, and I'm an alcoholic. Don't let this throw you. I wish that I had been chosen only 2 or 3 days ago. I received a loving invitation on May 12th. And then it said, every speaker, the chair will thank you for sharing if you have reached your 20-minute limit. Well, I'm a lawyer. And you're done. I can talk for 20 minutes on nothing better than anybody else. But give me a topic, and that's a different story. But to show you how I became prepared, on June 21st, I said to myself, I got to get ready for this thing. So I got 6 pages of notes. On July 3rd, I had some more. I got the truth group over here from my home group. One of them I golf with. Now, I don't want you to interpret from that I'm a golfer. But I do chase a little white ball around. Any similarity between what I do on the golf course and the game of golf is purely coincidental. And anything I say that relates to the topic is purely coincidental. Now, I can't be in San Antonio, the home of the Alamo, without thinking of a saying that some Texas AA guy said one time, either at a conference here or a conference in Akron or somewhere else. He said, do you know why everybody got killed in the Alamo? Because there was no back door. Now, I don't know whether that's a true statement or not. But I know this. If they had a back door, somebody locked it and threw the key away. The date of my last drink, I entered through the halls of, of Alcoholics Anonymous on the 12th day of January of 1973. Date of my last drink was the 17th day of April, 1974. So I was a slow learner. My sponsor used to say, White House, the trouble with you, you're educated beyond your intelligence. Now, there was another great statement that I heard in Akron. I know there's some people from Akron here. When I used to go to Founders Day, one of the speakers, a spiritual speaker, great speaker, since gone to the great meeting in the sky, Wino Joe. And he made a statement at Akron on that Sunday that stayed with me, and I was new in the program. And he says, when you come to these kinds of things, there's something in the air. You can't touch it. You can't describe it. You feel it. And last night, how many were at the big meeting last night? That moment of silence. That's when you feel it. I'm a service junkie on top of everything else. No, that doesn't require any type clapping. My home group is a Chapel Lane group in Midland, Michigan. And I got some of my buddies here. Now, you're all invited. We're a closed meeting. We're a tradition and step meeting. And a newcomer will hear a tradition before he hears a step. Now, every once in a while, I get a little irritated when we have a chairperson that asks the guy who comes through the door for the first time to talk on the tradition. I exempt them at least until the second meeting. And I go to step and tradition type of meetings, so when they throw a topic at me, I'm lost. Give me the steps or the traditions or something like that, and I could probably talk ad nauseum. Now, I mentioned Midland, Michigan, if anyone knows anything about Michigan, but all right. It's about halfway up the Mitt. Midland is the world headquarters for the Dow Chemical Company. Now, one or two things I often tell people, I live in the dioxin fallout area. One or two things happen to you. You either die young or you live forever, but you glow. And since I'm too old to die young, I'm going to live forever, but I'm going to glow. I don't have an original thought about sobriety at all. I am part of that tapestry that was talked about by one of the speakers last night. We all have a thread where I am a composite of all the good and bad things that happened in my life. There was a friend of mine, a guy by the name of Big Bob, who was in Bay City, who's again since gone to the great meeting in the sky. And Bob always started out talking by, my name is Bob and gratitude is my attitude. And then I knew another old timer that's gone to, it seems like everybody I know has gone to the great meeting in the sky, Tommy Thompson. And Tommy said, gratitude is the aristocrat of the emotions. It is impossible to be grateful and feel sorry for yourself at the same time. And that's why it's always, many times, so important to make that gratitude. Now, my attitude about that is that if gratitude is the aristocrat of the emotions, then forgiveness is the cornerstone of progress. That's what we get in the eighth and the ninth step when we start addressing those issues. Now, my wife's here, incidentally. My wife said that, what are you going to talk about? I said, I really don't know. And that's the truth. She said, well, have you forgiven the IRS? Hey, when I was in practice, they came in and locked me down, baby. And you know, it's interesting because I never held any resentment against them. I always felt that it was as a result of my own doing. And like this young lady said, I didn't come in here with a host of resentments as to people, places, and things. My problem was me. You know, one of the old statements you hear in AA, what's the problem when you move an alcoholic from point A to point B? He's there. And I would come in, and I told you I had that period of time from 73. See, I really thought I was nuts when I came through the door. And there were a few people that would probably attest to that. But I came in here, and I found out that I was nothing but an alcoholic. And I knew I belonged. But then I found out that you're not supposed to drink. I thought this was a maintenance program. Now, I found out I wasn't supposed to drink. And I found myself, I'd get 30 days in, I'd get 90 days in. People, places, and things would push my button. I'll show you, I'll kill me. So I go out and drink. And I kept going back to my sponsor with my tail between my legs. Now, the one thing, and this is my battle cry for everybody, is you've got to go to meetings. The one thing I did right in that process is I never quit going to meetings. But the problem was I saw people happy, joyous, and free, and I wasn't one of them. And I didn't think I was going to get a piece of that action. That the God of my understanding I had alienated, and I believe me, I had a spiritual core to me until my drinking got in the way. But I believe that the God of my understanding was not going to grant me what he granted you. And I kept coming back, and I kept coming back, and I kept going to my sponsor. My sponsor finally said, you know, God forgave you a long time ago. It's about time you forgave yourself. And there's a lot of merit to that. There's a lot of merit to that. Somehow that unlocked the flavor of sobriety. And I don't know why. It didn't excuse me from what I had done. Don't get me wrong. I still was accountable and responsible for those things I did either before or after. But somehow that relieved me of the bondage of self and allowed me to start progressing in the spiritual growth of sobriety. Because I think forgiveness is a learned trait. I don't think that we're born with that. We're born with a sense of love and a sense of wanting to be wanted. But forgiving is something that we develop. And when I was drinking, we lost it because it was always people, places, and things as excuses for whatever my dilemma was. I used to worry about the 11th step, you know, about conscious contact with the God of my understanding. And I really was always concerned about what God wanted me to do. And I went to my sponsor with that. He said, White House, you're thinking too much. He says, you know what? You get up, suit up, and report for duty, and God will lay out for you what he expects you to do today. And you take care of business. And that's why I'm here, because I suited up and reported for duty. Not because I wanted to, because I really don't enjoy doing this. I'd rather be sitting down there listening to one of you sharing your strength open experience. But I'm glad, and I thank the God of my understanding for the sheer pleasure of being here. I took care of am I getting close? Am I good? I'm good. That's another 12 minutes. But I took care of a guy in the program that had a considerable amount of sobriety. He was 80 years old and he was single and he was dying. And he knew he had cancer. He knew he was going to die. He wasn't going to take any treatment. And I was his caregiver. So every morning I would go over to see him. Before I go, I'd call him up and say, hey, Bill, how you doing? He says, well, I'm sitting up and sucking air, so I got to be okay. And that's another one of my battle cries. When somebody says something to me, that's exactly what I say to them. I'm on the right side of the turf and sucking air. I'm going to close. I want to read something from the daily. Here I'm struggling with this topic. Forgiveness, forgiveness. And sure enough, I read this once in a while. Like every day. And I ran across this on June 25th. I did not know that if I had just forgiven myself for some of my past deeds, God would forgive me also. Never realizing until I came to AA, when I honestly became willing to be taught forgiveness and forgiving, that life itself is a journey, not a guided tour. The journey of life is a very happy one, as long as I am willing to accept change and responsibility. And I think forgiving others and forgiving yourself are simply two currents in the same stream running parallel. I'm going to close because my throat's getting a little dry. I appreciate your kindness for allowing me to address you this morning. And in closing, oh, I got to tell this. I had a red hot joke I was going to tell you, which had nothing to do with this topic at all, but I'm going to pass on that. You know, back when the internet first started, you know, I'm a six-digit man living in a seven-digit world. And that's really wrong. I'm a three-digit man living in a 12-digit world. But when the cell phones first came out, I'm driving my car and have the radio on, and an advertisement came on. And it was targeted at salespeople that may go around making calls. And the theme of it was, you can make calls between calls, which I think is a great statement. Do you know what went through my keen alcoholic mind? How I used to drink between drinks. I'm going to say it. In closing, please. I have a little prayer, a little saying that I say every day, and I'd like to be able to say it. I shall pass through this way but once. If therefore there be any kindness I can show, or any good I can do my fellow man, let me not defer or neglect it, for I shall not pass this way again. God bless all of you and have a great conference.
Too bad he's so dour. He needs a dose of happy, joyous, and free, don't you think? Our next speaker is Diane.
I'm Diane, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a little nervous, so I'm going to use Jack's notes. Oh, hello, family. What an amazing thing that we get to be here. Oh, somebody's calling me. Is that God? You know, just looking out here and like I've felt ever since I got here to San Antonio and since I was at the meeting last night, it's just like an overwhelming feeling of, wow, you know, we are so blessed. We are so lucky. We are the lucky suckers in this world. And, you know, when I was new, I had all these questions about why am I an alcoholic? Why am I an alcoholic? And I came up with this little thing that kind of explained it to me for myself. Okay, there was a bunch of us a long, 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 long time ago, thousands of years ago, and we were all living in peace together. We loved each other. We knew what was important. It wasn't what ethnicity you are. It wasn't what you drove. It wasn't your sexual orientation. It was about love. One person caring for and helping another. But that was 1,000 years ago. And we get together every night at 8 o'clock and have a little love meeting. And it was wonderful. But then we heard that a great big volcano was going to come and wipe us out. And so we got together for our last meeting. And we said, well, how are we going to find each other again? And we said, okay, we'll come back as something that nobody else wants to be. We'll come back as something that other people think is bad and weird. We'll come back as something that other people don't understand. And therefore, we'll all find each other. So I believe we're alcoholics from Atlantis. Oh, Randy just told me that's 3 A's. Anyway, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. What it was like was bad. What it was like was weird. What it was like was very, very uncomfortable to be this alcoholic in my skin. I grew up in South Carolina, the codependent state. They're still codependent. You just look at them in the news. Because we all marry each other. Got a few extra chromosomes up there swimming around. And that makes us weird. And I happen to be an only child, and I was not the favorite. They sent me to kindergarten. And I got to kindergarten, and, you know, I was already an alcoholic by the time I was out of the womb. I was a quart low from the very start. And if they'd have just put a little flask in my shorts pocket on the way to kindergarten, just a little nip now and then, you know, because I got to kindergarten, there were people there. And I don't like people that much. They scare me. Because I think they all know what's going on, and I don't. And I feel less than, and therefore, I am terrified. So I should have had a little nip in kindergarten, but I didn't have one. So I hit the preacher's son over the head with a toy fire truck. Bam! He had red hair. I don't like redhead boys. And they expel me from kindergarten. And that started my brilliant educational career. And it never got any better than that. Mary Alice said, learning disabilities. I have that shiny object disease. Attention deficit. And I have this kind of disease, dyslexia. So they thought I was stupid in school, and they put me in the stupid row. And in 12 years of school, what I learned is you're stupid, you're stupid, you're stupid, you're stupid. I never made better than a grade C, and they would just pass me sometimes, and sometimes they'd fail my grade. But I had that feeling on top of that ism that I already had, that I'm different, I'm alone, they know the secret, I don't. What is the matter with me? That was my mantra. What is the matter with me? And every year that I went to school, I got that deeper and deeper feeling of what is the matter with me. I'll tell you just a little bit about my family, because the reason I say it is because I believe that when one of us gets healed here in this wonderful fellowship, I feel that somehow it heals the people that came before us. It doesn't make any sense. It's just the way that I feel, that the healing goes backwards to those people that maybe could not make it here, and that they get a healing too through us. I know that the healing goes forward because we help each other. So I think forgiveness means it goes backwards too. I had a small southern family. My favorite Aunt Barbara shot my favorite uncle, Andre, and killed him. She died of a broken heart 3 years later. My least favorite uncle on the other side burned my grandparents' house to the ground. We lived on a small island. You could see the flames from everywhere. He was drunk once again and burned the house to the ground. Once they built the house back, he just occasionally burned rooms off of it. One night I came home and I was about 13 and I was with other 13-year-old girls, and the mother who was driving us pulled up in front of my grandparents' house to let me out, and there was Bubba in the front yard, buck naked. And that's not something that you want to see when you're a 13-year-old girl. And I was humiliated by him, completely humiliated. I had an aunt who drank Drano to try to kill herself. We had alcoholism and insanity on both sides of the family, and all of those people are gone. I got to get here, and I am so grateful. But no matter what I saw them doing, it did not stop me from taking that first drink at 17 years old. And it was just like I've heard so many people describe. That drink went down, rolled around in my stomach, shot a message up to my head that said, "You're okay." I had never heard "you're okay" inside of my head. And it said, "If you do this more, you're going to be even more okay." And I was in a bar that night in Washington, D.C. It's called Rand's. It was on 14th Street. I don't know if it's still there. But I went in that bar, and that was my first drink. I was 17. Somebody handed me a fake ID. I ordered a screwdriver. Little girly drink, a screwdriver. I don't know what's the matter with that picture. But anyway, I drank that drink, and I drank a couple more, and it went down and gave me that message that you're okay. And I was off to the races. And I loved it. I drank as often as I could, as much as I could. And I'll just tell you some of the lowlights of my drinking. I moved out to Palm Springs in California when I was in my early 20s because I had a boss who said, "It's sunny and beautiful and everybody's got a pool out here. Come on out here." And I wanted a geographic, and so I went out to Palm Springs. And when I got to Palm Springs, I had never done anything but alcohol on the East Coast. But on the West Coast, it was as they stamped my visa, and I started doing other delightful things that alter our awareness. Alcohol was always my favorite, but I'd take anything. I was a garbage can. And I think part of it is that thing, like, the alcohol isn't doing it so good anymore, so you're trying to get back that magic thing where you feel that ease and comfort, where you feel good about yourself, but it takes more, and it takes different combinations. So I remember one time being in San Diego in a crowded bar with two of my friends, and one of the friends gave me a purple capsule from Catalina Island. That's all I had to know. I didn't need to know the chemical composition. It's just purple. Purple's a color I like. It's going to make you feel different. So I took that purple capsule from Catalina Island, and the next thing I know, when the cocktail waitress came by to ask me if I wanted another drink, she looked like a frog. She had that big old huge frog head, you know what I mean? And frog hair, and she had lipstick on her frog lips. And I fled to the bathroom to try to get away from her, and I walked in there, and all the women lined up at the mirror. They were frogs, too. And it was terrifying, so I do what I always do when I'm too weird to be around people. I get in my car and drive. Get in my car and drive up and down the freeway where I feel safe in my car by myself. And then I would drink and organic wine and organic acid. And you know what happens? All of a sudden, at some point in the evening, you know the nature of reality. You know it for sure, you know it. You can explain everything from the black hole in space to the tiniest quantum physics to everybody. We have some other philosophers here today. The only thing is, you wake up in the morning and you have forgotten the nature of reality. And you're all trying to put it back together. And you know, there was a time also, I never had enough money because I drink a lot and have an expensive lifestyle, I guess. And so I didn't have enough money, so I went to my friend Constance, who is this gorgeous woman, and I said, Constance, do you think that I could do what you do for a living? Constance had a swimming pool, a fur coat in the desert, that's a luxury item. And she had a lot of gentlemen callers who were on the golf tour. And I said, Constance, do you think I can do that? And she looked at me very skeptically. And she said, I don't know, but I'll tell you what, don't drink. Don't drink if you try to do it. Because she knew how I was, sloppy drunk. Sloppy drunk. Kind of drunk people put in showers. You know, put them in showers, just leave them there. That kind of drunk. Yeah. Kind of drunk that drives a round car because it's going to be round eventually. Kind of drunk that likes to live within crawling distance of her home. Kind of pitiful, incomprehensible drunk. So anyway, she told me not to drink, and she said, don't take money in public because there's a vice squad. So I said, okay. So armed with that information, my very next day, my first day on my new job... I went to this high roller hotel where the golfers hung out, and I sat at the bar. I got there early, 7 p.m. I got there early, and I sat at the bar, and I started ordering bird bath margaritas. You know those kinds you can't pick up? They're just like that, like a bird bath or a fountain or something like that. So I started drinking those bird bath margaritas about 7 o'clock, and about midnight, a man approached me. He said, would you like to dance? And I said, why, sure, that'll be $100. He said, okay. I said, go to your room and order champagne. I hate champagne. It's got bubbles in it. But I thought it sounded sophisticated. So I went to that man's room in that hotel, and he opened the door, and I threw up all over the guy. I couldn't even do that. I had to go back to giving it away for free. That story's funny today. Because we've all had a shower. And we woke up without a hangover today. So that story's funny today. Because we're all miracles today. But that funny story was not funny when it happened to me. I felt so disgusted at myself. So raw. So lonely. So bereft of hope. So hating myself. And that's the kind of thing you feel you can never, ever be forgiven for. And I'd lay in bed at night and remember my grandfather, who would take his cigar band off of his cigar and he'd put it on my finger and he'd say, be a good little girl. And I felt so far from being a good little girl. I ended up in a one-room wooden shack in Tucson, Arizona, in the Shady Lane Trailer Park on a street called Miracle Mile. I was 29 years old. I felt 99. I hated myself. I was so ashamed of the woman I had become. I prayed every night that God would let me die in my sleep. I bargained with God. You can see that I'm not fit for humanity. You can see that I'm the worst of the worst. Please let me die. I am serving no purpose here. Please take me out of this pain. And I would wake up the next morning because God had a better idea for this wreck of a woman. For every single person in this room, God had a better idea. for all of us. And I didn't die. And one morning I came to, and it was just like every other morning, disgusted with myself, and I said a prayer of surrender. And then the next thing I heard was call AA, and I called the program. And I got to y'all that night. And it was a big room, not this big, but a big room. There were three speakers, and I don't remember the first two, but I do remember Arnold. Arnold was a Native American man who stuttered. And Arnold stood up here, and he stuttered his way through his talk. And nobody could have carried the message to me any more eloquently than Arnold did. Because I saw that he had something he wanted to say. It's been a heck of a ride. I got sober March the 7th, 1974. And y'all have healed me in ways that I thought I could not be healed. One of my sponsors said to me, Diane, I was complaining because my defects are raging and I can't, why am I still late at things? Why do I still do this? Why do I still do that? Why aren't I perfect? Why? And one of my sponsors said, Diane, it's like this. If you have a watch, you don't take the watch off and then take the back off of it and start messing around in there. He said, you cannot fix that watch. He said, that's what God is like. God is the watchmaker. God made you. God don't make junk. And the healing will come from within, from God healing. You make yourself ready, but that's how the healing really comes. And I think of myself, and I think of a lot of us, you know, that AA is the greatest recycling program on the face of this earth. A bunch of us who were bereft of hope, pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization, hating ourselves like a bunch of puppies in the pound. You know, like there's the pound and they got those cages in there and the ugly puppies are way back in the back. They won't even come to the front of the cage. They know they're so ugly. Or they know that they've been bad dog, bad dog, bad dog, bad dog all their life. And we, you know, I feel like it's like y'all came into that damn pound and sprung this puppy out of there and saved my life for me. And y'all told me that I wasn't a bad person trying to get good. I was a sick woman trying to get well. And one of the greatest, most beautiful things that has happened to me in my sobriety is that I always thought I was unlovable and that nobody would ever love me. And I had 7 years sober. I was 35. I'd never been married. And I got on my knees and I asked God to please take away crazy makers out of my life so that I could find a good relationship. I moved to San Francisco and a man came and asked me if I would like to go to Berkeley on BART. Now, that's a dollar ride to Berkeley from San Francisco. And that's not very, that's not a very good date. But but he didn't have a car, but it was really sweet, and really he was loving and kind. And that man and I have been celebrated 27 years of continuous marriage. And when we first met, I discovered to my horror that he was 12 years younger than me. It's a dirty job. Broad for the job. And it all made sense the day that we got married, because right before that I'd been praying, oh God, where is he? Where is he? I've learned all my lessons. Are you deaf up there? And the day that we got married, it was as if God was looking down saying, Diane, you had to be patient. He was growing up as fast as he could. He was only in the sixth grade. And that man wrote on a mirror one morning when I was having a hard time. He wrote on the bathroom mirror, I love you. God loves you. You love you. Don't quit before your miracle.
I'd like to thank Mary Alice, and I'd like to thank Jack, and I'd like to thank Diane. And I bet you'd all like to do the same. Now we're going to open up for sharing from the floor with a limit for 3 minutes per person, and I'd like to ask your indulgence. Is it okay if I share for a couple of minutes? My name is Randy. I'm an alcoholic. Talk about forgiving. And I was thinking about a time when I was about, well, my sobriety date is May 13th, 1984. My home groups are Jumpstart Newton, Massachusetts, and the North Hollywood group of North Hollywood, California. And my hometown is San Antonio, Texas. And my home is wherever there is a big book, another alcoholic, a coffee pot, and a resentment. And I'd like to tell you a story about forgiving. I was about 11 or 12 years sober, and I'd had 10 brain surgeries in 4 months. And Alcoholics Anonymous did not show up for me. And I was heartbroken. I was very, very resentful. And I stopped going to meetings. And during my recuperation, which was painful and awful, I sat in my room, sat in my office, and I got on the internet a lot. And one of the things I did was I joined this thing called Classmates. Perhaps you know about it. And this guy contacted me, and he said, "Hey, it's great to be back in touch with you." He had been a classmate of mine in a place called Texas Military Institute, which is exactly what it sounds like. And I said, and I wrote back and said, "Gee, it's great to be in touch with you. How you been since you used to beat the hell out of me every day?" And and he wrote back with the following 4 words. "Oh, wreckage of the past." And I thought, there's only one place that I've ever heard those words. Maybe he's using them in another context. Nah. So I wrote him back and I said, "You know, are you by any chance a member of a fellowship?" And he said, "Yeah, I am." And I wrote back and told him how long I'd been sober. And he wrote me back and said how long he'd been sober. And we got on the phone right away and he made an immediate amends to me. You know, when I first got sober, Alcoholics Anonymous came for me. I didn't go to Alcoholics Anonymous, which is a whole other story. And if, you know, you'd like me to come sometime and tell you that story, I'd be happy to do that. But when I left Alcoholics Anonymous the second time, Alcoholics Anonymous came for me again. This guy made a formal amends to me through Classmates. I mean, he came to me. And I had the opportunity to forgive him. And when I did that, he said, "What the hell are you doing staying away from Alcoholics Anonymous when you need them more than ever?" And a day or two after that, I went back to meetings, and I've been going to meetings ever since. But you see, that's not the only point. And I think the major point is that when you're touched on the shoulder by God, it's a remarkable thing, isn't it? And in my case, sometimes it's hard to Sometimes you don't recognize the miracle. You can take it for granted. And every person in this room, every person at this convention, we've heard it over and over, is touched on the shoulder by God. And it's hard to remember. It's hard to see. And I want to remember that. You know, this guy came out of nowhere and touched me on the shoulder. And by giving an opportunity, giving me an opportunity to do a ninth step with him, I had an opportunity to open my ears and my heart to him. So it went both ways, really. I wish you all the capacity and the opportunity both to be forgiven and to forgive, because it's here that we have the opportunity to do all the things that we wouldn't have the opportunity to do otherwise. So that's it for me. Thanks. Okay, we're open to the floor. Would anyone like to share?
I'm Mary Alice, and I'm an alcoholic, among other things. And I just want to say good morning to everybody. How privileged I feel to be here. And I'm in the Tuesday morning women's group with Diane. And I can go to the log cabin anytime I want in Mill Valley and see Mary Alice. So I guess you know I really am lucky. And one of the things that I became aware of in the early days when I first found this fellowship through Al-Anon, so I'm a transferee, I heard that last night, was that forgiveness, you know, my dilemma was, how was I going to forgive? How was I ever going to forgive the great wrongs that had been done to me? And one of the pieces of inspirational material that I read in those early days said to me, that meant I was the judge. That if I had a list of wrongs, that meant I was the judge. And I was not the judge. You told me I was not the judge. Someone else was going to be the judge, or there was no judge. There was no judge. I had to let go of the judge. And that meant I had to let go of the judge of me. And what I've learned over time is that what's happened to me is exactly what needed to happen so that I could be there to turn around and reach out my hand to somebody that needed my experience. I had to be able to say, I've been there. I know what you're talking about. And if all this stuff hadn't happened to me, just exactly the way it happened, I had to be the mess when I walked in the door. And I was. I was a complete and total mess. And I thought I was nuts. And I thought I was nuts 10 years into these steps. I was still nuts because I had a lot more to do. So thank God, he had this plan. And if there's anybody out there that's new and you're trying to figure out how I'm going to forgive, and your story is so important to that person who walks in the door who is a mess. And when you can take your story and you can take that, all that crap that you walk in the door with, and make it useful to that person who walks in the door, who thinks there's no hope. And you can say, yeah, there is hope. Even with all the crap you have, I know where you've been. I know where you are. So I'm just thrilled to be here, and thank you so much for your inspiration this morning.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Rick. I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the Prescott Group in Prescott, Arizona. My sober date is May 26, 1982. And I don't know what the time frame was, but she was up on the way up there on the northwest side of Tucson. I couldn't quite make it there. I was on the south side of Tucson right about that time. It took me another 8 years living in a little rat hole of a mobile home on Benson Highway in Tucson, Arizona on May 25th. And what was important to me to realize today is that May 25th, I prayed to the God I despised that I grew up with. I prayed to that one. And I didn't know that. I heard the words this morning. I prayed that prayer of surrender. And that's a difficult task for me because I think one of the qualities of my alcoholism is just simply spiritual immaturity. You know, the me, mine, I, gimme. And I actually believed deeply that I needed to have what I wanted to be okay. And I was just wrong. I needed to have my beliefs. I needed you to believe what I believed for me to be okay. And I was wrong. I had a horrible resentment to the church and the religion that I grew up with. And how do you get through that? And actually, I think what was important to me, because I do understand about keep coming back. I think that that show up, that quality, there's five things. Show up, pay attention, be honest, don't attach to results, and laugh as much as I can. Just laugh at myself. The show up thing was important for me to keep doing another inventory. And what happened at 4.5 years was one more inventory that I couldn't do, I guess, earlier. And it was this binding of a man called Bob Dame and a priest called Father P, and I won't say it, and the church I grew up in, and the religion that supported that church, and God. They were all bound up together. And I despised my father for not being the father that I needed to be okay. And for this other man who wore these robes doing what he did to me. And the church that supported that man. And it was just all bound up together. And I took this one last inventory of this person who deeply, I think her name was Mary Alice, who, you know, had that experience to pass on to someone else. So I took that inventory, and every one of those got separated. And Bob Dame became this man who played this role of my father. And what I thought was all wrong, when I discovered, and I got to say, the hardest thing for me is to keep showing up sober and making mistakes. I became a father in sobriety. And if there's anyone who thinks there's any way to do it wrong, excuse me. 2 weeks before my first sober birthday, I'm on the altar saying I do to a woman I don't know, and I don't think I like her, you know, but I'm doing it because she's pregnant and I got a bunch on board from some old principles, old ideas. So there's no way to do it wrong here. What was important for me is when I got those separated out, that man became a man who was fallible. And I loved him dearly. I sat by his bedside when he died, and we were tight. And I'll reiterate just briefly the words that I learned from another program. And it's threefold. It says, And this word love was a four-letter word when I came in. I'm very, very fortunate. I feel blessed that love for me was never used in the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous because I despised the word. The word that I could feel that was deep in my heart and my soul was care. Because what I started to do was care. Before I could care for myself, and I'm a believer, before I could care for myself, I had to care and know that I cared for somebody else. Even if that was a little hurt dog on the side of the road, I could feel it, and that's where I started from. But there's this thing about forgiving, and there's another rhetoric that says, love is forgiving. Love is forgiving. And love is forgiving. I needed that, and I didn't know I needed that. I don't know. I need you guys. I didn't want to need you guys. You know, I keep coming back because I cannot make up the care. I'm a movie guy, and there was a movie, and Morgan Freeman once said, his wife played this role, and she says, "Don't you know you have to forgive yourself?" And he turned to her with all humility and just deep giving in, surrender, and he says, "Don't you understand? That's the one thing we as humans can't do, is forgive ourselves." And I think I heard it earlier when she says, what I needed to do for my right size, my right place, is to receive the understanding and the forgiveness. To receive. I get that from you guys. Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Nancy. I'm a grateful alcoholic. I absolutely love the conference and thank these beautiful speakers. Pardon me. I lost my self-centeredness, but this is a big party for me because I turned 34 years sober on June 28th, so I thought, wow. Anyway, so I'm 34 years sober. I've never understood forgiveness. I've struggled with it. God, how can it be all wound up in my defects, especially pride, you know? Pride has the I in the middle of the word. Pride, I. So I had a terrible time. I said, mentally, I understand the theory behind forgiveness, but how do you get it all through to your toes where this disease just resides in every cell? And it's like, finally, big breakthrough. Two things. One was I learned to walk in the shoes of someone I really was mad at. I learned to see life through their eyes and walk in their shoes. You know, it says our imaginations will be fired. So I learned to use my imagination to imagine what it was like to be the person that I hated. And the hate went away. Okay, well, that sounds really wonderful. But listen to this. I was in a conference in, I'm from California, Los Angeles. Tujunga is a little town there. And I was at a little service conference at my one of the clubs where I go, Dunsmore in La Crescenta. And this guy's talking away and seems to have a lot of knowledge. And he knew Gaelic. And he said, "I'm going to tell you something." And he said, "Here's what forgiveness means in Gaelic." And he said the word, which is beyond me. I couldn't hold on to it. Anyway, great. And then he says, "But this is what forgiveness means. Forgo getting even." I could do that. You know, that's like don't drink between meetings. I can do that. I know how to forgive now. It's forego getting even. Beautiful. Thank you.
My name is Clarence, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank everyone for sharing this morning. My sobriety date is March 21st, 1973. Late June and early July for the last 40 years has been a tough time for me. 40 years ago today, this morning, my daughter, who is almost 3 years old, was buried. On June 29th of 1970, my ex-wife called me from Key West, Florida, to tell me that my daughter had drowned that morning. And her admittance was simply that she had left our daughter unattended for 45 minutes. They were living on the ocean. She went out and found her. I did forgive her, and I believe I did, and what tells me that I have forgiven her, I don't have any conscious recollection of doing that. But for a lot of years in my recovery, grieving, you know, I had to learn to grieve, and I've done that. And for a long time, all I could think about was my loss and how I hurt from that, how that tore my heart out. But something happened, and I don't remember when it happened, but I no longer thought about what this loss was for me. I began to think about my ex-wife. And I'll tell you, I cannot, and I don't know if anyone here can comprehend what it would be like to find your child in that situation. And as much as I, went through the divorce and everything, I would not wish that would happen to her, but it did. And I am so thankful that I wasn't in her shoes. I don't know how in the hell I would have been able to live with myself. And it was tough enough to drink all that I did. And it brought me to my knees. And my life has changed significantly. I have no idea where in the hell I'd be today had that not happened. One thing that's given me a lot of solace is where she is interred. It's in the children's section of a Catholic cemetery. There's a large monument there dedicated to children. And etched in the monument are the following words. It is not your Father's will that a single child shall perish. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Richard. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is April 30, 1986. I want to thank the speakers. I want to thank this everyone who's here today. I think we're into some very deep stuff on this matter of forgiveness. My first experience with forgiveness in my life was 22 years ago. And I heard a man speak about his relationship with his father and gave us an opportunity who were listening to think about that. And I thought about my father. I thought about that day 34 years earlier when I was 11 and my mother died very suddenly in childbirth. And how my father tried to stop the bleeding. And he and I never talked about that day. And he died 7 years prior to that experience of thinking about it. And I was angry at my father. Why did he let that happen? And on that occasion, I was able to consider he didn't want that to happen. It was beyond his power. I lost a mother. He lost his wife. I had my first experience of forgiveness, trying to imagine what it was like for him. And I felt his love. And, you know, that was in the very, very early stages of my recovery. And I began to apply forgiveness freely. And it's only been in the past few years that I've been able to forgive myself. It is a practice. It's a new experience of forgiveness. And we're able to understand what letting go means. And that what's happened to other people and why they are the way they are, it may be beyond my understanding, but it's not my business to understand or to judge where they are. It's just my business to mind my own business and to love them for who they are and to accept them. And my great lesson about forgiveness is in the prodigal son, where when the son comes back to the father, the father is not interested in what he did wrong, doesn't want to talk about that, just wants to receive his son with open arms and with love. No blame, no wagging of fingers. That's the God of my understanding, who just wants me to be in the moment, understand what I've done in my past, and forgive myself because I really did the best that I could. Even though I was screwing up. And then to be the father that I can be today and not worry about the father that I wasn't to my kids. I want to thank Mary Ellis for her share. I was deeply moved by that because I heard the pain and heard her getting in touch with it and heard her healing. I appreciate that. And I don't think there's any mistake that she was given that mission 3 days ago, because she carried it in a most beautiful, profound way. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Corky, and I am an alcoholic. My home group is the Winners Club here in San Antonio, the 7 a.m. First One Today group. And welcome to San Antonio. Forgiveness? I don't know about you guys, but my hang-up was I had to forgive Corky. My first AA meeting was the 6th of February, 1976, at Fort Hood, Texas. I stayed sober 4 different times for 9 months, and then gave birth to another disaster. I was sober then for 6 years, 81 to 87. And I got drunk again. Why? Because I could not forgive myself. I could not let go. Finally, a loving higher power through friends got through to me by saying, look at step 2. Hope. The principle behind step 2, at least for me. The book says self-centeredness is the root of our problem. If God can forgive me, why can't I forgive myself? Isn't that self-centeredness and arrogance? Through a loving higher power, finally I was able to let go of it, to forgive myself. And I've been sober since the 27th of October, 1988. One last thought. Last night was the biggest AA meeting that has ever been happened in the entire universe. But it's not going to last long. Tonight will be bigger. Right now, folks, you and I and all of us are the center of the spiritual universe. Woo!
All righty then. Once again, I'd like to thank our speakers. And I'd like to ask you all to do us a favor, please. There is a meeting later on called an old-timers meeting or a long-timers meeting. And this meeting has elicited some confusion, and I want to clarify for you. The format of this meeting is as follows. Everyone at the convention who has 40 years of continuous sobriety or longer has been asked to give their name, which goes into a box or a hat or something. And several names will be chosen, and these people will be asked to speak. Some people, I think, believe that this meeting is only open to people that have a whole bunch of sober time. Truly, truly. So if you would be so kind as to pass on this clarification so we can make it viral, so everyone in the convention can have the clarification that the purpose of this meeting is to have a whole bunch of long-timers to speak, and that everyone here, whether they have 1 day or 1 minute or, you know, 15 seconds, can come and hear the combined wisdom of long time in AA. Okay? Okay, thanks. All right. Once again, Mary Alice and Jack and Diane, thank you so much. We're going to close this meeting with the Serenity Prayer.